It's Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
I don't love junior mints. I just don't hate them. I don't understand why they are treated like second-class candy.
It's Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
You don't understand why a candy that is basically toothpaste wrapped up in stale chocolate is treated like a second-class candy. All right, I get it. It's a good, valid question.
It's Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
Is there a time to change? You know, the three teams I've drafted this year, second-class candy is pretty good.
On WGR, Sports Radio 550.
Thank goodness for that clip, because I name my teams randomly like that, and there are literally hundreds of them, although most of them don't need names. Like, they're just sort of best ball teams, now that you ask. But, you know, a few dozen of them need names, and I get to the season, and I can't remember why, what it was that led to, you know, some of these. I'm looking at it right now. Work beef is probably something from in here. We had a work beef, you know, just sort of these little gems that slip out. Bulldog says them, and I just write them down. Like, I literally do that right here in my notebook. And then, I'm drafting tonight. I need a name. What's in the notebook? Work beef. Really good. What I want, of course, we all want this, is in these big tournaments to get the email that comes out every week telling you who's in first place. I know it's so early, but the FFPC and other sites send out emails every week, like with an update on the standings. And sometimes the names, I mean, they could even be obscene, but sometimes the names are just super weird. A lot of these guys, I don't want to get to this point. I feel like my way is better, but a lot of these people draft so many times and they just number their teams. So literally, there's one famous guy in fantasy football who plays, it's believed he plays more than anybody else. I mean, hundreds of thousands of dollars, I think. And I'm playing in one main event league with him, and his team name is 87. Which is because it's his 87th high-stakes team, and, you know, there are levels to this. But Taco Juice, I don't know where that came from. Panhandle Chipmunks, I think, was a thing with my brother-in-law, who's from Florida, and we were talking about chipmunks on that trip to Canada. I mean, Sense of Elk, that's a Bulldog one. We had Elk Salami one day that maybe I saw in the store. Thanks for asking, but now you know a little bit more about how these names, where they come from, and I just wish I kept better track of what they mean. Evidently, I'll stop at this one. Evidently, it's because it had to be when Dwayne Thomas died, the Cowboys running back from the early days of the Super Bowl. This guy, as you may know, he was, like, complicated. You know, I don't want to put it in a bad light. He was complicated. Wasn't really talkative with the media or anything. I remember one later on in his career when he was with San Diego. Has the show ever sounded older? San Diego in the NFL. He warmed up like all by himself in the end zone and then left the game early. Just, you know, kind of like a little bit of an Antonio Brown type thing. And so when he was with Dallas and they won Super Bowl VI, somebody asked him after the game on TV, like on the network, post-game broadcast, you know, something like, you seem to be moving faster than everybody else. And he gave a one-word answer, evidently, which everybody laughed, and I always loved that. So that's a tribute to that guy, Dwayne Thomas. Okay, we will have, we don't have Bulldog today, again, as you may have already discerned, but he's still not well enough to jump on, so, you know, good feeling about tomorrow, but he couldn't make it today. Paul Hamilton will join me at 3:30, and so I went to see, as I always do, when Paul is coming on, click on his Twitter and what is he writing about. And he wrote up about how the Sabres, when they were offside at one point in practice today, or maybe somebody missed an assignment, Paul will give the details. Lindy Ruff had them do push-ups on the ice. And, you know, I want to bring this up with Paul. It's the first thing he wrote about. I kind of feel almost like a little bit like I'm not doing my job fully when I say this. Like, I did this yesterday too, just how excited I am for Lindy Ruff. Like, I'm just, I've been waiting for something from the Sabres that feels good. And I thought that Eichel would feel good. And then it almost didn't. Quickly, it didn't. Like, it was just so... O'Reilly was supposed to feel good. Like, that moment. But then he's in that accident in Canada. And then the Eichel thing, it just got so ugly so fast. And really since Granato, I guess, in a way. But it just hasn't really felt good. And Lindy does that for me. But I do want to say, you know, saying all that and just generally feeling really positive about that, about his return, I think, you know, this kind of thing, it's his way. You know, Paul has said it, and I think maybe fans would have known it from when Ruff was here, that he can be tough. But what I think could be watched here, or should be watched here, is that now he's so much older than the players. And we've seen everywhere in sports, I don't want to say coddled necessarily. It's not, again, this is funny. This is the second time already I'm doing this. It's not necessarily good or bad. But, you know, players have just generally grown to have a lot more power versus coaches. You know, there's so much more money. And they're given more freedom. Coaching is different. I mean, it's so different, right? Even if we didn't play at a high level, we know this from paying attention to sports, how different coaching styles are now than when, I mean, you know, 30 years ago or whatever, just at a time when maybe most coaches had the power and the will, and they would make the choice to just, you know, run their guys into the ground. Punish them. Really, that's the word, right? Punish them for mistakes. It's Herb Brooks and Miracle, you know, Herbies. And there, I guess there were some sprints today, too, if the Sabres messed up. I appreciate, this isn't really now the fan talking, but I appreciate the idea that the Sabres need discipline and they need structure. And part of why this is happening is for those purposes. And, you know, this isn't surprising, but the players themselves are saying that. You know, being willing to hold the guy in the locker next to you accountable and just taking it more seriously overall, because, you know, every time there's a coaching failure, you come out of it and you sort of identify, well, what was the problem? And then the next guy is meant to be the opposite of that. That can be offense versus defense in football. That can be, you know, just generally disciplinarian versus the so-called player's coach. So I don't think Ruff is going to be called a player's coach. We want this to be a good thing for the Sabres. We want this to be what they need. Push-ups and sprints, I think you got to be careful. I mean, he's 64 and they are 24. you got to be careful with that stuff. So I think, you know, Ruff is a smart guy. He's got tons of experience. I fully respect all of that. And I think, you know, he's talked about this going to Jersey and recognizing that he has to change, you know, to some extent to be able to relate to young players. He had a young, talented team there and it took off. I mean, they did great. It's the reason I needed to be able to support this idea. If Lindy Ruff did not have that season in New Jersey 2 years ago, I could just not get on board with this. It just would have felt like a marketing scam. But he did. And he took a young, especially because they were so young, that worked like it did. You know, he won a playoff round, seventh game, and like, you know what, I can buy this. And the next year, their goaltending wasn't as good, and maybe that kind of thing gets old, you know? I don't necessarily want to compare him to other coaches, but you can think of the guys that are the sort of disciplinary type, and they're usually older, and it doesn't last as long. You know, it's just the kind of thing where I think players used to, more than ever, a certain level of freedom and ability to kind of work things out on their own, and they're not used to being told to do push-ups in the middle of practice, I'm pretty sure. But that happened today, and I'm choosing to still be optimistic about all this, but that is the kind of thing that does worry me a little bit, because the players are going to say how much they welcome. It's the second day of camp. They're going to welcome discipline. They're going to welcome experience. They're going to welcome credibility. Everybody knows the organization needs it. But I think that does have a shelf life, you know, not those things necessarily or exactly, but the push-up discipline, hard-ass kind of stuff, you know, you got to pick your spots there. So Paul coming up in about 20 minutes, maybe a little less. Joe Ostrowski today, Sal Capaccio today. I was really excited yesterday about our conversation, talking about the stark changes in offensive production and tactics in the NFL so far. And I mentioned yesterday, getting into it just around now, how like my whole Twitter was, I just want to make sure I acknowledge the fact that I know the name has changed, but I just don't want to call it that. It was all just people that I follow talking about this. Like, why aren't teams being able to throw the ball? Do they want to? What does really explain it? I would say that I haven't been online as much today, but I would say that today feels like more of a continuation of that, at least with more people talking, more people doing the work, trying to figure it out like we were doing yesterday. Like, why is this happening? Is it that top players don't play in the preseason? Is it that they don't practice as hard or as often? Is it too high safeties, the so-called safeties in the parking lot? Is it something else? Like, what is really going on? And I follow people that I really admire for their ability to analyze this sport and figure out answers. And sometimes today they've been at odds about this, which probably means they're a little bit both right. Nate Tice is one such analyst, and he pointed out, like, his main takeaway is, why can't offenses move the ball and score? He said, in short, their offensive lines aren't good enough. And this has been a refrain through the NFL for many years. I think of Belichick, first of all, for this. Somebody pointing out, look, practices aren't as hard. It's funny, like, this sort of juxtaposes nicely with the Sabres thing. Practices aren't as hard. You don't have as many guys come into the league and they're not quite as prepared. Underclassmen. I would even think this could extend to the transfer portal guys who you have. I mean, take Ray Davis on the Bills. He played in three college programs in 3 years. Not an offensive lineman, but like, what do you want from Sal's point yesterday? What we know about the Bills. Continuity means a lot, and especially for younger college players bouncing around, you know, trying to get the right fit and you'd be able to get drafted, different things. That's the opposite. That's not continuity at all. So all the more reason to question how good the lines are, you know, not just how they operate, how they practice and develop in the NFL, but even players coming into the league. So you have good logical reasons to question that. And so that was Nate Tice's point. Offensive lines, the quality, the depth. So quarterbacks are getting rid of the ball quicker because they have to. And so you're not getting the ball 25, 30 yards downfield through the air if you don't have time to throw. Makes sense, right? Kevin Cole shows up, another really smart football analyst, and says, well, then why is this just happening now? If people have been complaining, you know, probably rightly, about these points on the offensive line, depth and quality, why is it so dramatically different last year, this year, than over the previous few years? And, you know, 3-4 years ago, it was spiking the other way. And the offensive line point goes back more than a decade. I mean, it wasn't like it was really different 5 years ago. How much practice time? Preseason, the college point, how different really was it? So I like that point too. You know, I mean, what does it probably mean? They're both right. Offensive lines not as good as going back years, but also, well, it's not just happening, so you want to be able to point to other things. Warren Sharp had a stat. This is really kind of incredible, I think. And it's, you know, maybe it lines up with the last part. Passes at or behind the line of scrimmage. That has shot up in the last couple of years, and really this year over last year is a pretty big jump. This year, they're at 27.1%. Think about that. Would you have guessed that? 27.1% of NFL passes through 2 weeks did not cross the line of scrimmage. I don't mean where the play ended. The ball in the air. It's, you know, mostly by design. Flip to the running back. Passes to Dalton Kincaid, which seemed to never go past the line of scrimmage for some weird reason. Like that. You're throwing the ball short. Works in concert with don't have time. But, you know, this is really more, I think more, it's both, but more this is what we think we're going to have to do. My prediction for this Bills offense this year, all summer, was they are going to run the ball a lot more and they are going to play short. And that's exactly what's happened. And they are 2-0, and they've scored 30 points in both games. So we'll see how it goes. But it's exactly what's happened. It's a shorter, slower, quote, more conservative offense. Just, you know, run versus pass. It's exactly what's happened. And they're not alone, but sideways stuff. It really hasn't even gotten to Samuel yet. Samuel was one of, would have been like top of my list for why. You make that free agent investment. There's just not a lot going on otherwise at wide receiver. So I think they want to feature Curtis Samuel, and that's how you would do it. Like a better McKenzie, he would get handoffs, and he would not play sort of a traditional X receiver, try to beat the guy, jump ball kind of stuff. You know, you would be more, you know, seemingly more creative. That's how a coach would put it with him. That hasn't really happened yet, but this is still how they're playing. And this is how a lot of teams are playing. 27% of passes so far this season have not even crossed the line of scrimmage. So it's so many things. I think there's two more I want to say. One is, and this I brought this up yesterday, we've talked about this, the transition in the league at quarterback, as in like who's playing the position, contributes to this. It's running quarterbacks and it's rookies and second-year guys who are really not ready yet. Richardson, Levis, Caleb Williams, who definitely does not look ready, and he was supposed to be above this, but it doesn't look like it. Daniels, you know, these guys are a different style of player. They're going to take off. Jaden Daniels has done a lot of that so far. Richardson didn't last week, but last year he did, week one. You know, they're going to go pretty quickly. Malik Willis is a backup, but he had this game, and that was all running in that game for Green Bay, distorting the numbers a little bit more. So you've got a transition at quarterback. I think the best point of all for me, a guy I've only talked to one time, but whose analysis I always sort of usually defer to, Jay Moyer, who said, look, this is simple. Without the reps, preseason, but also just practice. Here you've had defenses finally get to a point where they recognize we really don't need to obsess about stopping the run anymore. We're going to try to eliminate explosive plays. We're going to try to eliminate the big play. And if you want to run it on us, you should. We want you to. This is what I've been saying about the Bills forever. Like this is really one guy who looks super good in all of this around the league is Sean McDermott. Because this is exactly how the Bills, what they have stressed and where they have been successful as a defense, when they give up big games on the ground. I mean, a lot of times people line up to criticize them for that. I really don't care that much. I don't know if the Bills care that much. They have not built their team accordingly. What they have been good at is eliminating the big plays, and they have won constantly. And that correlates. So defenses have made, you know, generally, they've taken that step. And offenses have not figured out yet because of, the lack of repetitions, the offensive line point, the quarterback, all of it. They are settling. That is what offenses are doing, including the Bills. There's a balance between we need to do this and we want to do this, but they're settling for short stuff, for runs. There's quarterback runs in there too. And that's how we got here. And I still think, like I said late in yesterday's show, I'm still predicting that this will go back. And I think officiating will basically help that. Because the league, I mean, Another thing I said yesterday, I mean, I I'm on a roll. Look, the league will not want, I guess we don't have proof of this yet, but this is how it happens. The league will not want ESPN, et cetera, talking all the time about how nobody can score and how the $50 million quarterbacks of the NFL can't get the ball down the field. That will become the narrative. It already has. And the league will not want that. And so what do we have today? We have Mel Kiper Jr. ranting about how they should ban two high safeties. Literally. Week three starts tonight. Ban. We got to make rules to fix the sport. It is way too early for that, if that's ever going to be sort of a sane take. It's way.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, like Alo, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Alo, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Too early for that. But like, I don't think we should have to do that. But this is the conversation. And the league is not going to want to have its broadcast partners talking all the time about how nobody can score. So they're going to call different penalties coming up, and they're going to bring the scoring numbers up. And I think while you might not get quite as much passing production, because if these big chunk gains come on penalties, that's not going to show up in the stats. But I think end of the day, that will show up in points. And then everybody will calm down. I think that's where we're going. But it's, you know, I never like to roll the same topic out 2 days in a row. But it's so good. It's so good. Why is it happening? There's so many great points being made, and there's also points being made about changing rules. And it's just a great conversation right now. And we're right in the middle of this. And the Bills, as a contender, are a perfectly valid example of a team that is dealing with this. And I think they expect it to be, and I think they even want it to be, which is, to me, not my favorite, but so far, so good. That's another reason why I thought it would be like this year, because when they went to this kind of offense last year, they won almost every game. Why would they change it? They were willing to trade Diggs because they were going to play this way. Like, everything pointed to this. And what you have now is maybe a little bit of a tug of war coming within the league. All right, well, can a team keep winning this way? Is the league, are the rules, you know, if you will, going to change to a point where other teams can be successful another way? And then where does that leave a team like the Bills, who so far just want to play ball control? So thanks for listening on that. Should have a good show today. Paul next. Catch up on the Sabres day two of camp. Joe Ostrowski at 4. We'll look at week 3 starting tonight in the Meadowlands, and then Sal with the latest on injuries and some more on sort of the state of football right now coming up at 5. No Bulldog. This is Mike Shope on WGR.
It's Paul Hamilton.
That's what they called me in college, was the bone.
He has the facts to back up his opinions.
People ask me, well, how are the Sabres are they going to win tonight? I don't have a clue.
On WGR, Sports Radio 550.
Paul Hamilton's appearances on WGR brought to you by Equitable Advisors. Planning for your future is about more than just money. Let Equitable be your guide. And Relax Honda. Relax, we got this. Paul Hamilton, Sabres reporter, part-time baseball broadcaster. Paul, you might have gotten the Bison's Game of the Year.
And I got very lucky because I got everything. I got, like, when the Bisons came back, they're behind 5-1. I got the 3-run homer. I got the homer to tie it, and I got the homer in tenth inning to win it. Those were my innings, so I got very lucky. Where poor Pat sat there and watched me do all the other stuff.
I mean, you consider that luck? I don't. I feel like that's probably preordained. These are Paul's innings. That's probably what they talked about in the on deck circle.
Well,
let's
it's
go.
So much fun because it's different for me, you know, to go do baseball and stuff. So I appreciate that last year they started asking me to do it, and it's a lot of fun to do.
We've got some Saber stuff to talk about, starting with Rasmus Dahlin, and I would say this is really good news, a relief.
Yeah. He talked about it today. You know, Lindy, as I told you, is very brief with stuff, but Dahlin was watching practice from the bench. Ryan Johnson was there, but, you know, Ruff said he's doing well and he'll miss, quote, probably a couple of days of practice, but it's nothing too serious, is using his words.
Good.
You know, it sounds like he should be fine.
Yep. You know, yesterday your mind might have raced to the possibility, especially with the, you know, it's the first few minutes of the first practice, like kind of a symbolic possibility for a Sabres team that's had so much trouble, but not so. So that's good. And the timing is important here, right? Because if he had some kind of an injury that would have cost him, you know, weeks or something, maybe he doesn't even go to Europe. And, you know, signature star, maybe he still would. I don't know about whether he would still go, but we don't have to worry about that.
Yeah, and, you know, in my mind, probably the next captain. I mean, yeah. Lindy Ruff has not come to me and say, well, this is who I'm going to put as captain, but I'd be rather surprised, and you know not much surprises me. I'd be rather surprised if he's not.
Me too.
But, you know, and especially, you know, Adams talked about how he went golfing with Dahlin and he wanted to spend, like, the two of them just 4 hours picking his brain and talking and things like that. So, just to me, everything points to him being the next captain.
You are seeing now, too, around the league, teams are making those announcements. Like, Hedman in Tampa was one. Mm-hmm. Like, camp starts, the season starts. This is the time where you would announce that. It doesn't have to be right now, but I would think the Sabres would make that announcement, like, any day.
Well, Lindy Ruff, and I get it, too. You know, he talked with players and stuff in the off season, but now he's got them in practice, and, you know, it gives him a chance to see their habits and those things. And when Dahlin's practicing, he won't be disappointed. If he's thinking, well, I'd like to at least see him practice and that kind of thing, it won't change his mind to a negative thought. I mean, Dahlin practices better than anybody on that hockey club. And he will call people out in practice. It annoys him to no end if people are not practicing hard. So if that's all he wanted to see, Dahlin will definitely be the captain.
No other injury stuff to talk about?
No, not yet. it's been hard practices. Mike, I don't know if you saw the picture of my article, but it gave you a little insight to practice. Lindy Ruff standing over six guys doing push-ups is the picture on my article there.
Yep.
And that's what it is. Why are they doing push-ups? It was a bad change. And he wasn't going to put up with it. So he stopped practice, told him to get on the ice. They did it down and back, and then they did push-ups.
How many?
I didn't count them. I'm sorry.
Okay. 10?
Yeah, I apologize.
Would be a good, maybe a good guess? Is 10 a good number?
So, it might have been more than that. It might have been 10, 20, I don't know, somewhere in there. And that's – and. It's been very consistent for 2 days now. If you go offside, the whistle's blown. If you commit a stupid penalty, the whistle's blown. Just things that he is not going to put up with. And I'll tell you what, I was standing there as they were coming off the ice today, and they were dead tired. They were dragging. You know how social media will, you know, do things with the Bills and the Sabres and that kind of thing. And some of the players really weren't too interested today, not because they didn't want to do it or they're being jerks. I mean, they wanted to crawl into their stall.
Yeah.
Mean, they were just dead tired, because the Sabres are great about that stuff. They I think they enjoy doing that, some of that stuff too. It was just they were just dead tired.
You know, we've talked even yesterday about a new time here for the Sabres, hiring a coach that you want to have give you something that the last coach or coaches didn't, and you know, Ruff credibility, discipline, structure. I talked about this already today, how I think that all makes sense. And I think also, for what it's worth, fans like this from their coaches. They like the idea of players being punished for mistakes. You know, a lot of people resent the money. It can extend to that point. But either way, this is kind of a change here, maybe a big one, for the Sabres. And I've said many times, and to you, that I'm excited about this move for the Sabres. But I also think you have to be careful with this stuff. He is so much older than the players, you know, like that. This kind of discipline, you would know better than I, was not necessarily push-ups, but normal in sports, you know, half of his life ago when he was playing and getting into coaching. And now it's anything but. We've had many conversations about how coaches have had to be different. And so we're going back here, if I can generalize like this, and you'll correct me if you need to. We're going back here in terms of style, and it can be a big adjustment for players. You can recognize that this is what we need as a team, or even I need as a player, but I think this can wear on guys.
Well, let's be honest with each other. I mean, what are these guys used to? They're used to being coddled because they've been coddled by the last coach. You know, it's like, well, they're under pressure, and the poor guys, and they just signed a new contract, and that put a lot of pressure on them and that kind of thing. And Ruff couldn't care less if they just signed a new contract or whatever. And the players have said that this is what they want. None of them have complained. They've all, you know, even though they're tired and they're dead, they all kind of look at it. Yeah, we put in some good work today so far after two practices. But, yeah, if you're constantly being screamed at, like Phil Housley screamed at the guys from the time practice started till time it ended, after a while it just became noise. It was nobody was paying any attention to him because that's all he did was scream. There was just no effect to it anymore. And, you know, so I think you're right. You got to be careful that if you're no matter what happens and you're constantly making guys doing push-ups. Now, this push-up thing and the sprinting in two-week practice, that's the first time I've seen that. So it's not like he's doing that for every mistake, but he'll blow it down and make them sprint back to the other end and start over again. He'll do that. But as far as what you're seeing in that picture of the pictures of the push-ups and things, that's the only time they've done it in the two practices. So it's not like he's overdoing that or anything, but he's also, as I said, dealing with players who've been coddled for the last 2.5 years.
I would add, a mutual friend of ours was listening earlier when I was talking about this and texted me to say that he's noticed this kind of thing is happening all over the league. The Sabres are not unique as a team being, you know, quote, disciplined like this. So maybe that's something to watch. I don't want to sound like, I don't want to sound at least like I think this is just a Sabres thing. But, you know, there is the specific example of what the last coach's style was this one.
And most coaches will bench players. The last coach very, very rarely bench players. He would on a rare occasion, but it wasn't very often.
Paul Hamilton on the Wester Hotline. Lindy talked goalies today. You gave him a question about the workload. We talked about this a little bit yesterday. I liked that Ruff said in a quote that you wrote in your article, I really feel for the most part we've become a two-goaltender league. That gave you some insight into what he's thinking, because you've made the point that in the past he wasn't always that way.
Right. And, you know, I even wrote in there, you know, we know what he did with Miller and with Hasek, but even in Dallas when he had Kari Lehtinen, he played 65 games twice in 59 games in another year. But you're right. He said, you know, he really didn't have an answer for my question because he wants to see how it plays out. He basically said, I got to see how they play. You know, how is Luukkonen playing? How is Devin Levi playing when he steps in? Those are the things he wants to see. He did agree that Levi's got to play for his development, but it sounds like in a perfect world, he might be pulling Lukanen's games back a little bit. 54 games last year, and the year before it was 33. I would say somewhere maybe in between there. I can't see a perfect split of 41 games each.
No.
You know, if Luukkonen continues to play like he did last year, but I could see maybe Luukkonen in the high 40s, you know, somewhere in there, which is only, what, 5 games less than 54. But I think they do have to be careful when you got a 22-year-old goaltender who, by the way, I thought showed great improvement last year once they did what they probably should have done the whole year and sent him to Rochester, gave him the opportunity to take the net. And if you recall, when he got there, Rochester was on the verge of dropping out of the playoffs. They weren't playing very well. He got the net. By the time the regular season was over, Rochester tied for first place. And he was playing great. He came up to Buffalo, I think, in that time, had three starts in Buffalo. I think played very well in all three. And you could see the improvement in him and how much, you know, and he embraced it, and good for him. You know, he didn't pout or whatever. He embraced the, and by the time he was done, he really, I mean, I remember talking to him after, you know, when in locker clean out in Rochester, and he's going, I really got to like these guys, and I made some really good friendships here, and I love playing, you know, behind these guys. And so for a year, he really embraced it. And so I thought he improved quite a bit down the stretch and in the end of the year.
He did specifically mention Levi as the compliment to Lucan. And I think 2 out of 3 works perfectly. That gives Levi enough action to be, you know, at least relevant. And, you know, he's working and hopefully improving. And then Lucan, I mean, they paid him. So it should be more than half, I would think, you know, ideally. Maybe that's where it sounds like Ruff is thinking too. Kyle Okposo retires.
Mm-hmm. That's expected, especially when you won the Stanley Cup. What more do you have? You've won the Stanley Cup. You've had a great career. You were the captain of the last team you played on other than Florida. You know, he's to an age now where, you know, maybe you're on borrowed time as a player when it comes like that. So it's good to see, and it'll be interesting to see where he goes now. If he wants to become GM type like Mike Greer did, or if he wants to become a coach, or, you know, what he might want to do in the field of hockey, if he wants to do anything. So we'll see, but, you know, congratulations to him on a good career and retirement.
If you are restless about Garrett Wilson.
Oh, yeah, a little bit.
Call me.
A little bit. I mean, I'm not the big I thought the Jets were crazy with this Aaron Rodgers thing. I didn't think Aaron Rodgers was all that great his last year in Green Bay. But you never know. I mean, I'm not a football scout or anything like that, so I wasn't real crazy about the idea for the Jets of saying, well, boy, you guys are Super Bowl contenders now to get him. In the first couple of games, it hasn't worked out. It worked out great for Lazard the one game.
Yeah.
So, but, yeah, he's not somebody you give up on. I didn't give up on Garrett Wilson last year when he had horrible quarterbacking. He would get you the yards and the catches.
Right.
He just never scored.
Yeah.
So he might get 9 catches for 107 yards or something like that. But that's all you got.
You take that tonight.
The end zone.
You take that tonight. 9 for 107, I would.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Anytime, right? We take that anytime.
The way passing is going in the National Football League right now, I surely would take that.
There are so many interesting stats. You know, I'm just saying, if you get sort of frustrated with him, you've got my number. You want more trades, you always say it.
I don't know if I'd use your number because I was the idiot who cut Jefferson in his rookie year because he was awful his first 2 games, and you picked him up the next year with him.
At least you didn't trade him to me. That would be worse.
I just cut him.
You just cut him. Maybe that is worse, actually. All right. Thank you, Paul.
Take care.
Paul Hamilton on the Sabres. They have a preseason game on Saturday. It starts quickly. I still do. I'm not off the Jets. I was on them all offseason. They lost to a good-to-great San Francisco team week 1. Couple of turnovers. I didn't think it was really that bad. They got beat on defense in that game, which was maybe more surprising than anything. But the win last week, not huge or anything at Tennessee. But I like them tonight. And part of all the messaging right now with the NFL and the discussion is the teams were just like generally not ready for the season. On offense, I mean, man, the Jets are a great example of that. Quarterback missed all of last year, didn't play the preseason, old, you know, like that's logical. That would make sense. Running back's great. They have two. Like, they used Braylon Allen with Breece Hall last week, like on the field at the same time. Allen had two touchdowns in that game, and Hall is so good. So I like him tonight. I think the Patriots finally, week three, but just should not be on the same level. I think six is a fine number to give with the Jets, even though it's like the most they've been favored by in forever. For me, that's another reason to take them. Speaking of that kind of thing, Joe Ostrowski coming up at 4. Bulldog is out sick today. This is Mike Shope on WGR. Contest time. Let's go. Caller 5 will be our winner, as usual. 716-221-4WGR. That's 4947. Caller 5 wins a pair of tickets to see Tom Segura at KeyBank Center next Friday, September 27th. Courtesy of Live Nation. Tickets available now at Ticketmaster.com. Joe Ostrowski coming up. Sal Capaccio later. Now, an update on Trista Crick's dog. Before you go and ask me for one. Emma Crick, I'm told. I checked in with Trista, who had to fly. She was on the show Tuesday, as usual, and then was flying from Oregon to Washington, D.C., and on the red eye, she had the dog all kind of ready. Some meds were involved, and she said the exact quote was, she handled the flight like a champ. So that's good to hear. Do you call your dog ever, do you use your last name when referring to your dog or when talking to your dog? I have started to do this just not even thinking. Margot Shope is now just like, I'm not even sure she'll be in the house when I'll just sort of blurt that out. Margot Rita. But yeah, I'm totally like dog guy now. And I every day I think about what they're thinking. I love thinking about what dogs are thinking. Like, there's certain things they know. I might sound naive, and maybe I am. I had a dog for the last 15 years. But Samson died, and now we have Margo the puppy. But, you know, knows her name, knows where the food is, knows where the water bowl is, knows where the door is. Some of this stuff is really, she's brilliant, I think, for a dog to be able to know some of these things. She does some tricks. I just wonder how much more she might know than she can actually express. Anybody have a good or funny book on that? I would love a reference, because I'm now fascinated by what this dog is thinking, if she's indeed thinking. Maybe I think that still might be a fair question. You know, she does some things that make you wonder if she is actually, if thinking is really the right word for it. Joe Ostrowski, BetQL, coming up next here on WGR.